Oh, hello, horse people, all the horse equestrians, all everybody across the country. This is Scott Miller. We're bringing you today International Equine Report. Basically, what we're going to start out with is we're going to talk about just who IENTV.org is. We're an equestrian distribution network. What we do is we try to bring horse events of all breeds to the equestrian industry through bbsradio.com. One of the shows that we're going to start off with is At the Wire. It'll be weekly updates on the road to the 2020 Kentucky Derby. We'll highlight broadcast live racing from various tracks across the country, culminating with the 2020 Kentucky Derby. It's going to be a great show. We enjoy ask you to get out to all the tracks. You know, see these horses running and then watch them on TV or IENTV.org in the first Saturday of May. Another program we have will be Chuck Wag. You can travel with the Chuck Wagon on a journey that will take you across the U.S. to equestrian events of all breeds. You're going to see how the equestrians live on the road. You're going to see what they eat and how they eat. And it'll be an exciting 30-minute program there.
Okay. Hey, Scott, I want to be on that Chuck Wagon.
Okay, do you? Okay. You want large fries with that?
Yeah. I just had my onion ring, so I could use some fries.
You got it. Well, Steve, I'm glad you're going to get on that. We're going to overcost all the programming on IEN, and which brings me up to you're going to be the host of Flying Turns, our standard red show. What have we got to look forward to from you?
Well, on the Flying Turns this week, we're going to go over all the award winners that have been announced by the United States Harness Riders Association. All 12 divisional horses have been named, along with most of the leading drivers and trainer awards. And, you know, there's a plethora of awards that go out this year, and they're all given at the Harness Riders Dan Patch Awards Dinner, which is February 23rd in Orlando. And at that dinner, because there's a couple categories that haven't been discussed or revealed yet, they are Trotter of the Year, Pacer of the Year, and the Harness Horse of the Year. And during Flying Turns this episode, we're going to talk about the possible candidates for Harness Horse of the Year.
Well, you know, on our last show, we kind of picked a few that we thought might be there. How did we do?
We did very well. Did we pick them all? No, but we did very, very well with it. And
how did McWicked do? That was my favorite.
Your favorite. You know what? McWicked won.
And there you go.
I'm going to call it a classic battle because he only won by 2 votes over Lather Up. And I know Casey Coleman and her stable are happy as can be. What an accomplishment for Ed James. You know, last year they were the horse of the year. Now they're come back as a 8-year-old and now retired. So he's going to go to the breeding shed with a lot of impressive hardware behind him for, you know, those people that are going to breed to him.
Yeah. Well, you know, I saw her going out to the track here at Sunshine Meadows the other day, and I asked her, and she had the babies going out, and I said, is there another McWicked in there? And she said she might have, you know, another one, you know, coming up.
Down the road, as the 2-year-olds are in training and they really start, you know, grinding down and dropping speed, we're going to see, because Casey spent a lot of money to buy the proteges of one of her top horses she had, Betting Line. And apparently these 2-year-olds are turning a lot of heads.
Well, yeah, you know, Tony Elias Barn has got quite a few good two-year-olds also. He did very well this year.
Oh, absolutely. And, I have to think back. I'm going to pull out my list, and we're going to go over all the award winners. But okay. He's having a superior year at the races.
There's another trainer we have here at Sunshine Meadows that surprised a lot of people was Paul Kelly. He had a fairly good year.
Oh, I think so. Paul Kelly's done very, very well. But you know what? And people say, well, it's a trophy. Well, it's not just a trophy when you win divisional, like Course of the Year honors and stuff. It's something that horses really can appreciate insofar as the owners looking forward to the next year.
You know, one day we were walking into the Eclipse Awards for the Thoroughbreds, and everybody was talking about, there's the trophy, there's the trophy. And I kept trying to tell everybody, I said, it's kind of unusual. It's a trophy right now, but in 30 minutes, it's going to be history. You know, and it's surprising how many horses, that are coming up that you don't ever, really know about. But next thing you know, you look at that award and then you realize the history behind them. You know, and that's really amazing, for the equestrians to look at. I don't know how many champions we'll have here at Sunshine Meadows, but I know one thing, we're home of the past, present, and future champions of the harness industry. And just can't wait for them, to see what we have here in the coming months on the deck that Myron Bell's going to have out here. It's really great to see that because it's approximately 12 weeks of every Saturday. They have all the potential owners and owners. They have drivers from all over the world come in to look at, these horses. They're all numbered. They go around the track, and they train. And, it's amazing to see how they grow and how who's going to be what, at the end of that 12 weeks.
Oh, yeah. When by the time these two-year-olds will leave, let's say Sunshine Meadows or I guess the state of Florida to see what's, to go up north to race, you know there's going to be world champions out of them. It happens every year. The last couple of years, especially Sunshine Meadows, not only McWicked, but how about Atlanta, who happened to have beaten Manchego for older trotting mare, again, by only two votes.
Right, right. And Tony also had, Alanya had three Breeders' Crown winners, that could be future horses of the year.
Oh, absolutely. They're gonna come back strong. But, depending when you want to get into it, we can go over these award winners and talk a little bit about them.
Okay, yeah, let's go for it. We've got a full hour here.
Okay, well, the first division, we'll look at the two-year-old trotters, and the two-year-old trotting colt of the year is Real Cool Sam, who is named after the late track announcer, auctioneer, publicity guy, Sam McKee at the Meadows, and this one was trained by Jim Campbell for owner and breeder, Real Cool Sam. I mean, Peretti Farms, Fashion Farms, Jules Siegel is the owner and bred this horse and named it after Sam McKee. And he won 9 straight races. He did lose in the Breeders' Crown, but because he was so impressive in his first 9 starts, winning $500,000, and he got the honors as a 2-year-old trotting colt of the year. And he is sired by none other than Muscle Hill, who is obviously not only a world-class racehorse in his time, but probably one of the most proficient sires, trotting sires in the world.
Is there a common thread, Steve, that runs with all these champions. You know, is there the fact that they come out of Florida, or, you know, or they come from New York or Pennsylvania, you know, that gets all these horses to Horse of the Year?
You know, you can argue that, because you can look at the horses that were trained in Florida, that had good weather, that didn't miss a beat. But there's also a number of award-winning horses who did stay up north and brave the elements and the cold weather and still came on to be, you know, superior horse.
Yeah. Who's on okay. Next on our list?
Next on our list, two-year-old trotting fillies. And, of course, we're going to go right local, because she's back here at Sunshine Meadows again. Her name is Ramona Hill. And she is, again, another daughter of Muscle Hill. And it's trained by Tony Alagna right at Sunshine Meadows. She was there training all last season. She has a plethora of owners on it. Brad Grant, Crawford Farms. There's also the In the Gym Partners, who I met one of the other day at On the Deck. So they're down here, and they're real excited. And she only made 7 starts, but she won 6 of them. She finished 3rd. She made a little over $400,000. But it was also a classification where there were 5 trotting fillies that could all have won. Any one of them could. And, again, the voting was very close. She won by 4 votes, you know, which, and of course, she was impressive. So she's down at Sunshine Meadows, and we're going to get some reports on her as she begins training back again.
Well, you know, how's the rest of our list? Was it all close? Was there any outstanding runaway winners?
Well, yeah, there were. And in the trotting game, a runaway winner was Green Shoe, a 3-year-old trotting colt. He was out the very, you know, the best of his class, and there was no question that, you know, he was going to win. I thought, at least. I know Chimpanzee was in consideration, but and there was, you know, both those horses are trained by Marcus Melander, but Green Shoe was the big winner. 10 wins, 13 starts, $1.2 million. He missed, you know, just missed in the Hamiltonian. He actually has a good shot for Trotter of the Year. And then next up was the 3-year-old trotting filly of the year. And once again, that was another close one. Between Millie's Possession, who won 11 of 14. That's who we went with. But the winner was When Doves Cry, Renee Allard's horse. She won 5 times, but when you win the Hamiltonian Oaks, you get extra bonus points, and she certainly earned them.
That was another question I was going to ask you. You know, when you get Horse of the Year, you know, does that put a lot of pressure on the trainers for the next season? Or, you know, it's one of those things you breathe a sigh of relief and say, you know, let's go on to the next one.
Well, I think that's what's happened with Green Shoe. Even before the end of the season, they retired him. And his book, his stud book, is already full and closed. And this was a horse that had a little bit of problems, whether it was greenness or you know, he would, you know, he'd make a break and then come back and win, you know, which you don't always like to see, but he was so good, I think they would rather put him in the breeding shed than try and race him as a 4-year-old. And obviously the syndicate is so strong, he's book solid.
Of all the winners this year, how many do you think are going to be back next year to race again?
Well, of course, all the 2-year-olds will come back. Of the 3-year-olds, I know that one, who was a big winner, Better's Wish on the pacing side, he was unbelievable. He had 10 wins in, I'm sorry, Better's Wish. Yeah, he had 13 wins in 19 starts and 6 second place finishes. He was awesome. But what they're doing with him and makes it unique is, well, not so much unique, it's been done before, but not to this extent, is that he's probably going to breed 30 to 40 mares this year and then come back to the races. And that's what we love to see. They do it extensively in Europe, and, you know, they have some great, great champions who can race during the season and then go off to the breeding shed and then come back again. So, right. I mean, it's sort of like double dipping. You're getting paid for the breeding rights as for the live foals, and on top of it, you're bringing back a world champion horse who can make easily $1 million a year if he stays in shape like he was.
Oh, wow. That's good. What about the two-year-old Frost winners this year? Do we have any outstanding ones that you can recall? To me, two-year-olds, I wait till they get three before I make a judgment.
First off, the one that won was Tall Dark Stranger, trained by Jimmy Pachter's daughter. And she was great and deserving. She won 8 out of 9. Now, she's going to come back and hopefully expect big things. And his main rival, Poppy Rob Hanover, who was great, we expect a lot from him. And one of the horses that also got a couple votes was Elver Hanover. He went undefeated, 9 for 9 for the Ron Burke stable. So we're looking for them. We're looking for some great three-year-olds coming back. And you know what, Scott? You don't know. There could be a two-year-old out there that only made a couple of starts, looked really good, started to soar up a little, so they wisely turned him out for, you know, instead of a couple months, maybe for 3-4 months, and they're going to bring him back as a three-year-old, and they're going to be a tiger. And we don't know their name yet, but sometimes that's what happens, and those lightly raised two-year-olds can come back even stronger at three.
Well, you know, that's what I kind of look at. And what I do is I kind of look at the trainers of two-year-olds and see how good they are and, you know, how many of them step forward the next year. And that's why I always like to see, you know, the fillies. I like watching the fillies because, man, you can have some monsters come back, you know, like Atlanta. You know,
well, that's what we're going to see. And here's a little story on one of them. A two-year-old pacing filly. She didn't win her division. Her name is JK First Lady. She did win 5 of 11 starts and made nearly $400,000. This is, again, another Nancy Pachter trainee. But she is the first foal from the 2015 Horse of the Year. She's a great lady. And when you have a Horse of the Year drop her first foal who makes $400,000 is amazing. So, I mean, this is superior breeding. I mean, she's sired by Western Ideal. But, I mean, this was a match made in heaven, and it came true. And I believe there's also a two-year-old brother that's coming up the ranks. And that's what I'd like to see. You see a world champion mare have foals, and sometimes they just don't make it. Moneymaker had difficulties. Peace Corps had difficulties. I mean, there were some world champion mares that, you know, they just didn't produce. Now, here's a harness horse of the year that has produced, and that's what you like to see in the sport.
But to
her dismay, there's another two-year-old filly out there by the name of Lion Sentinel. She's won the two-year-old pacing horse of the year. She's a Captain Treacherous. She won 9 of 14 starts, 4 seconds a third, 800,000. She blew by everyone else in the field, and of course, we can't wait to see her next year.
Well, you know, that's fantastic. You know, to see all these, you know, horses coming out and not getting off track here. But the one that I really started noticing years ago was Wiggle It and Jiggle It. How they brought that horse along. It's amazing. So that's why I started watching, you know, the two-year-olds and the horse of the years, because that gives me a good, you know, scope on what's going to happen during the year. And it makes racing more exciting to, you know, pick these horses of the year and see how, you know, they do. You know, it gives me something to look forward to.
No, and the story of Wiggle It, Jiggle It is a great one. It's of how this son of Mr. Wiggles, a rarely known stallion, turns out to be Harness Horse of the Year and crushing his opponents for trainer Clyde Francis and George Teague and his son Montrell, who drives. But then he became injured, and he's a gelding, so there's not much else to do with him. And it's been 3 years, and they brought him back. And in his third start back, he just won at Dover Downs in 151. So, I mean, it's great to see him. And hopefully, if he's sound and can, I don't know if he'll ever come back to his form as a 3- and 4-year-old, but most definitely he can become a terror on the track. And there's other good ones, too, that we're going to see. The pacing mare, the older pacing mare of the year, she's coming back again, and her name is Charton N, which, you know, we all know about. The Joanne Looney, Jim King trains it. Tietrich owns a piece. And this mare is amazing. She totally dominates the class. And who knows next year, if she comes back as strong as she has, you know, she definitely might go against the boys. And people have to remember, this mare went 146-4 this year. Amazing. No mare has ever gone that fast.
You know, it just kind of scares you. You know, I hope they get a good vacation and layoff, you know, and they do come back. And on Flying Turns this year, you know, we can highlight and we can kind of follow these horses, you know, to, you know, when they're racing, where they're going, how they're doing, that type of thing.
Absolutely.
It's going to be exciting.
The other division winners we talked about were Atlanta beating Manchego just by 2 votes. And the 3-year-old Philly Pacers, a horse by the name of Warriubru, which is a tough one to say, but she was a tough mare, a mare now of Philly. She won 12 of 19 starts, and she easily won, I think, almost nearly 100% of the vote for 3-year-old pacing Philly of the year. And I'm pretty sure she's going to come back and go against Charton N. So, I mean, that's going to be a classic matchup.
Yeah.
So now the question, Scott.
What's that?
Go ahead. The question.
What I wanted to ask you is, these horses that win by one or two, you know, maybe we should really start, you know, thinking about second and third place, you know, to keep an eye on for the next year. Because if they're that close,
absolutely,
you know, they're just a race or two away of maybe being horse of the year next year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, well, McWicket is retired, and so is Lathered Up. They were only 2 votes separated them. I believe Manchego is going to come back and race again against Atlanta, and that was only a 2-vote margin. So absolutely, we love to see these horses come back and race, and let's just hope so. I mean, it's tempting to go to the Breeders' Shed, but in all respect, in some cases, these mares can make more money racing than breeding. So why not, you know, if Chardonnay can continue to make between $900 and $1 million a year, her foals are not going to bring that kind of money.
Right, right. What about
eventually,
owners of the year?
Owners of the year. We had a bunch of them. In fact, for the first time in 48 years, we had a tie for the Proximity Award winner. And that, the Proximity Stan Bergstein Award, it's called, is the second highest honor anyone can get other than going into the Hall of Fame. And this year we had a tie between, and it's funny when you have, you know, 200 harness riders voting, or I shouldn't say it's not that many, maybe 150 harness riders, you know, across the nation voting, and you end up with two people getting a tie. That shows how great these people are. And the tie was between Joe Ferrado, who's the head of the Horsemen's Association in New York and a top amateur driver, who, when he started out, he was a professional, but now he helps run and competes in the amateur driving ranks. And also the top breeder owners, Al Libfield and Marvin Katz. And they both tied for the award. And they, of course, are the most prominent breeders and probably the biggest donators to the sport of harness racing. They raised over $300,000 this past year for to help with the programs for retiring standardbreds, that they have a good afterlife when they're done racing. The owner, of the year. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, I'm getting ready to say that's why, you know, the horse of the year, you know, it's so important, is because you have to do a lot to get to that, you know, to get that honor. And you know, the horses, not only the horses, but the owners, trainers, and drivers.
Oh, no, yeah. You don't get these awards, you know, just for twiddling your thumbs. That's for damn sure. You've really got to earn it. And it's a great compliment. And, of course, the owners that somebody has is going to say, wow, my owner, my trainer or driver or whatever is the driver of the year, and I've got him on my horse. I'm looking good. It is a big honor. That was the proximity award. The owner of the year goes to, the Caron stable, which is headed by Sweden's Adam Strom, or Ander Strom, I'm sorry. And he also, him and his company, had three horses in the Hamiltonian, Green Shoe, Green Malachi S, and Gimpanzee, all owned and trained by the stable. I mean, they had a superior year. They also had other horses. The trainer of the year, in that retrospect, is Marcus Melander. And he's the one that trained Green Shoe and Chimpanzee and Green Malagashki S, and a number of other trotters, and was well worthy of it. The driver of the year is a gentleman who is probably the first person ever to come from outside the United States in Turvey Filkion and taken over the driving colony and done really well, and his name is Dexter Dunn from New Zealand. Again, that was a category where, you know, Tim Tietrich had another superior year, and Aaron Merriman scored 1,000 wins again for the third straight year. But in retrospect, the voters went with Dexter Dunn, primarily because he's finishing as the third top driver in North America. And he only came to this country a year ago. Granted, he did an awful lot of good in New Zealand, and he won the World Driving Championship. But most people don't think that outside drivers can come and do well. And this year they learned a lesson between Dexter Dunn and with Andy McCarthy. Let's see.
With Dexter, I think it's amazing because to get acclimated to not only to the United States itself and its lifestyle, you know, but for him to get, you know, not have been to any of the tracks that he was racing on previously. You know,
he had been to the United States before for less than a month. He only drove a handful of times, I mean, just to see what it was like. But then since then, he went to Ireland and England, Canada. You know, he's driven all over other than New Zealand and said, nope, I'm going to try the United States. And you know what? Some of his fellow countrymen gave him a break. But primarily, once people saw how Dexter Dunn drove, they wanted him on their horses. And in fact, he is the main driver of Better's Wish, who's one of the horses to be considered for Harness Horse of the Year. So Dexter's got off to a fabulous, fabulous start. The good guy award this year went to Jim King Jr., who many people know was he was an okay trainer in his early years. But now, later on in life, he ends up having Sharton N and Lion Sentinel and a host of other good horses. He goes from, having a 10-horse stable to having 50 horses now. And it's quite a move. But Jim King Jr. is also a gentleman and somebody who's great with the media. You can call him anytime, day or night, and he's going to talk with you. He's going to go out of his way to let you know how their horses are doing. They love the publicity. And as long as his wife, Joanne, doesn't get too upset over something, she's pretty good with him, too. But he definitely is the term good guy and well worthy of it.
Well, that's good. What about our amateur driver of the year?
The amateur driver of the year is, I gotta say her name properly. The young lady from Ohio.
Well,
Jasmine Arnold, that's it.
Yeah.
I had to think. And she had an unbelievable, she had a UDR, like a batting average for the drivers, of over 500 in her amateur races. And she hasn't, you know, haven't been heard too much in the past, but she just got started driving. She's a fourth-generation harness horse person.
And so she knows what's going on.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? She's only the second woman to ever do that.
Oh, to get the amateur driver title, yes, that's true.
Right.
And actually, you have to go back a little bit, and there's been some very good top women drivers, but they're professional. The Jackie Grassi is the Beef Harbors of the past. But now the Hannah Miller and Jasmine Arnold, I mean, they're doing great. And what people also in the United States, North America, have to realize is that women drivers and jockeys in Europe are becoming much more prevalent. In Europe, especially in France, they have the Monty races, where they ride trotters, you know, in the same mile and a half, mile and a quarter distance races. And there's so many more women jockeys coming up, and they're doing great. And here in the United States, we don't even have parimutuel wagering on our racing under saddle. Yet last week there was 130,000 euros, which is about 150,000 American race. And there's going to be a final in a couple weeks racing under saddle that goes for 600,000 euros, which is 700,000 American. It's just unbelievable.
Do you think that riding under saddle will ever take off here?
I don't think so. I think the movement was very, very strong, but it wasn't strong enough, and that we don't have it yet. They've done some of it in Canada, but it's just not strong enough here, which really, to me, is wrong, because what you can do once you start racing horses under saddle, you can go to any thoroughbred track and do it on the turf, which they do in Ireland and England.
And I think that's going to come here soon to the thoroughbred industry. You know, they'll invite them to the thoroughbred track, because it's another avenue to bring people in to see, you know, the product of the equestrian industry.
Absolutely. If a club could get together to have enough horses in one or location, I'm sure the thoroughbred tracks would say, fine, let's give it a try. And whether they have to go into a chute, which I'm sure they can learn to start from, or if they want to bring in a mobile starting gate, either way, these horses, I mean, I don't think they can race properly on a thoroughbred dirt track, but they definitely right. can practice and get ready on a turf course.
Right. Well, you know, they at Kentucky Downs, they used to start from a wire like they did in Europe, you know, years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing how they adapted to doing that, you know, where they would just come up and start from a wire. You know, it could work, so I'm sure it could do the same with the standardbred industry, you know.
Well, let me tell you, Scott, in 2 weeks, as you well know, I'm heading over to France to cover the million-euro Prix de Marique. And that race in itself is a mile and three quarters, up and down hills, 18 horses in the race. They start with three tiers, and it's what is called a standing start. There is no starting gate. There is no wire. They just have to get in their proper post positions or they're disqualified. And when the starter says go, then it's a stampede. They all turn and go. And, you know, from a standing start, which is quite a thing to see. And hopefully it's a fair enough start. And because they've got over a mile and a half to race, so they got plenty of room. But it's going to be spectacular. And it's not behind the starting gate. I mean, you can, as long as people practice and get used to it, they can start in all different fashion.
There you go. Maybe we can do a remote with you over there. You can give us an update and report on what's going on.
Absolutely. We're going to have stories. We're going to have lots of pictures. And we're going to have Heather Vitale coming over. So you know there's going to be a big Facebook presence as she does her thing, you know, for a week over in France.
There you go. Now, where can we watch all this, Steve? Can we watch it on Facebook? Is there any?
Yes, it's all going to be on Facebook. If people should go to the Harness Link Facebook page, and like it, and then they'll get all the notifications, and they'll be able to see all the reports from Heather and myself, you know, throughout the week.
Oh, that sounds good. That sounds good. What else did we need to cover on
Well, farm now we got to talk. Who's going to be the harness horse of the year? I mean, a couple people know already because they have to make the trophies and get everything set. But that's the big secret. And, you know, I've narrowed it down to three horses. And they are Green Shoe, the trotter, Better's Wish, the three-year-old pacing colt of the year, and Charton End. And maybe a few votes for McWicked. But deep down inside, I think it's going to be different because there's so much competition that the horses, the pacers between a McWicked, between Better's Wish, who was outstanding, and Charton End, they may divide up their votes, and Green Shoe might win.
I tell you what, I think Charton End. I just think that horse is a vision of what's to be next year.
No, you're 100% correct. I mean, she nearly won $1 million again. At one point, she had a 14-race win streak. And granted, she didn't race against the boys, but any horse, a top-caliber horse, wins 14 races in a row. And then towards the end of the year, yes, she got tired. So what happened was she got beat, you know, by a neck in the Breeders' Crown. She got beat by a length in the matron at Dover. Caveat Alley was the one that beat her three times towards the end of the season. But in retrospect, she raced the whole year. She took on any of the best pacing mares in North America and beat them time after time.
Yeah. Well, you know that's the thing that I look at is, you know, the longevity of the season. You know, you see a lot of times a horse can come up and win a couple big races and everybody's saying, oh, what a great horse. But then you got to look back, you know, like Charton End, you know, that was there day in and day out, you know, all year long. And that's why I think it should be Charton End.
Well, you're just going to have to go to the dinner February 23rd and find out.
And they got to drive through. I'm a poor guy.
Yeah. Well, then I'll tell you a secret. It will be live It'll be live on Facebook.
There you go. Okay, see, now I'll be able to attend.
You'll be able to see. Everyone will be able to watch. The entire dinner will be done live on Facebook. So you'll get
fantastic
to see all the award winners, hear some of the speeches, and most importantly, everyone will find out who's the Trotter of the Year, the Pacer of the Year, and the Harness Horse of the Year. You know, back in 2014, J.K. She's a Lady was the two-year-old pacing filly of the year. She went undefeated, 9-for-9, and looked super. But there are other horses out there. The world-class trotter Pinkman was there. And another horse, I'm trying to think of the name. So J.K., She's a Lady, didn't even win Pacer of the Year. Because the Pacer of the Year and the Trotter of the Year, Pinkman, had so many votes for each of them, and those that voted for J.K. She's a Lady, she snuck up and won Harness Horse of the Year. And that's never happened before, that a horse wins Harness Horse of the Year and didn't win Pacer or Trotter of the Year.
Wow.
Yeah, it really shocked. When they made the announcement, a couple of the harness writers at the live broadcast said, no, you're reading it wrong. And it was like, no, we're not. And they actually had to have a little conference and show because they couldn't understand how that could happen, but it did.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's going to be good. What Facebook page do our listeners go to see that?
That'll be on the United States Harness Writers page.
Okay.
And that'll be broadcast, and we'll talk about it more once it's done, because the USTA and the Harness Writers work together on broadcasting it. And but so between the Harness Writers page and I know the USTA, then that's where it'll be.
There you go. What else have we got to talk about here, Steve, from the Harness people before we get into our next little segment here?
Well, the next thing we have to talk about is, the racing this season is, of course, quiet as we gear up, but a lot of the older pacers are getting ready for the annual Morton Levy pace at Yonkers Raceway, where they go for 6 weeks, $50,000 a week, and then have a $500,000 final. And I know that's what they're gearing Wiglet Jiglet for, and he's racing again, and they hope that he can come back to form so they can go into that division. But it's for older pacers, and it's a heck of a series. They usually have anywhere from 3 to 4 divisions. You know, and that's $50,000 a race every week up until the week before the finals, because everybody needs to earn points in order to be one of those 8 horses.
And what's the final? How much money in the final?
$500,000.
Oh man!
Yeah, it's an iron horse series, and I really look forward to see what's going on here, but. We also have to note that horses from New Zealand and Australia are more prevalent in American racing now than ever before, and primarily because a lot of the New Zealand and Australian horses if they don't develop anything at age 2, they turn them out. And sometimes they don't bring them back until they're like 4 years old and fully grown. And because of that, because they're lightly raced and not worked that hard, when they do develop, becoming 4, 5, and 6, they become monsters. I mean, they sit on the outside of another horse, you know, traveling, you know, 100 to 150 feet more than the horse inside of them, and then they pull away in the stretch. It's just unbelievable how game these horses are.
Yeah. Oh, man, I tell you, the lull right now for harness racing, but it's getting ready to open up, and I can't wait for it. See how it starts, how it turns out. See how all of the horses here at Sunshine Meadows do.
Yeah, in fact, I'm sure some of them will be heading up north after their little vacation, you know, to get ready to go to the Levy and some of the other series, and we're gonna try and key and point out those horses as they get closer to going up to race. That's going to be another project we have for Flying Turns.
Yeah, well, you know, it's nice having Flying Turns here because, you know, of all the people that we have, and we invite people to come out to Sunshine Meadows here in Delray Beach, you know, to see the horses train on Saturdays out here. Just remember one thing, Sunshine Meadows. Home of past champions, present champions, and future champions. You know, you can't go
there
wrong coming out here to visit them.
Well, and people are invited out every day of the week they can come. It's just on Saturdays, On the Deck provides the coffee and bagels and a lot of people, because if they're working during the week and stuff, they can come out that day. And it's a great experience. But if you want to see Casey Coleman's horses, what do you got to do, Scott? You tell me.
Well, I tell you, 6:05 this morning, I think it was their second or third set going.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> Is it true they wear the minor hats on their heads instead of helmets so they can see where they're going on the track?
Yeah, I have to get out there on the gator with my big lights on
headlights,
to show them around, lead the way.
Casey doesn't waste any time, and she is out there so early. So, yeah, if you've got trouble sleeping, then go out. Casey's got a beautiful deck, and they'll tell you which of the 2-year-olds in training are going and what's going on there. But if you wait until 9 o'clock in the morning when all the people are coming on the deck, Casey's going to be cleaning the barn up already.
Yeah, she's going home, you know. Well, you know, we're going to have an exciting season out here, you know, and same thing on IENTV.org. We're going to have a good, you know, season. We left off there at Chuck Wagon, and we'll have a show called Chucker. It's international polo as well as domestic polo. you know, that you can see. It's a great sport to watch. You don't have to be real rich to go to watch polo matches, especially like at Wellington. You can pull right up to the polo fields and you can park and you can tailgate, you know, and spend a, you know, a nice Sunday afternoon.
You're right. It's wonderful. I've been to the championships twice, and I even got my fedora hat there that I wear. But it is, and there's a lot of champagne flowing there, and
right.
A good time by all. I mean, it's just exquisite, and the matches are right in front of your face. I mean, it's almost like you got to watch out for that chucker ball, just like a hockey puck in a hockey game.
Oh, you're exactly right. You know, I saw last year a Rolls Royce pull up to the sideboard there and park next to a guy that had just a regular old station wagon, and here they're tailgating, you know, and you had you know, socially, it was amazing, you know, to see how it is. The quality of the horses, the quality of the players, some of the best in the world are there. So that's good.
It is.
Check in with Chucker, and you can see where the matches are at in your area across the United States, and, you know, go out and attend.
If you're into horses, you have to really appreciate it, because what they do and how these horses run and sprint, and that they actually have teams of horses. You know, granted, you might have five players, but that team's going to have at least three strings of horses that they're going to jump off and on and get back out there and push them while they have caretakers walking and blowing out the other horses that just competed, so that if they have to, they can come back and you know, be again back in the match. But
it is. And you're talking about excitement, looking forward to things. One of the other shows that we're going to have is called Quest for Equine Gold. The road to the 2020 Olympics, and it's from all over the country, all over the world. Every week here in Wellington, we have what they call the Winter Equestrian Festival. We're giving away $40,000, $50,000, you know, to $100,000 every Saturday night light. They have entertainment, they have food, they have vendors. You can get up close and personal with the horses. You know, so we're going to be following that road to the Olympics, you know, there. You can go to our website.
No, Wellington is a superb event, and if you haven't been to any of the shows, you have to make it a stopping point, because between the dressage and the jumping, and it's just spectacular, and you're going to see horses that later are going to be on TV in the Olympics.
Oh, you got that right, you know, and that's what we look at. And we have another show called Zero to Ten. It's all about dressage. That's, you know, from the best dressage riders in the world. You know, it's just unbelievable. You can go to our website, look at our Zero to Ten, you know, programming, which is good. We've got Quarter Time, which is all about quarter horses and AQHA. You know, what they do and how they do it. You know, it's for the real cowboy. You know, how they rope and pin, and, you know, how they do everything. You know, it's a great show there.
Rodeos are top notch.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You know, it's gonna be
that.
It's gonna be good to see.
When I was a young boy, maybe 15, 16 years old. There was a Hunt Cat Farms in Three Bridges, New Jersey, was an equestrian center. And the gentleman there we were friendly with, and he made a deal with my father that I would go and help him bale and load all his hay into his hay mow in return for riding jumping lessons. And I did okay for a few weeks, and I was to the point where I could jump a 3-foot fence easily. And so he put me up on one of his better horses, and we had jumped a couple fences, and I guess I got him too wound up, because the next thing you know, he took off, and we cleared a 5-foot fence. But as soon as we hit the ground, I went forward and right off the horse.
Oh man, yeah. See we'll have a lot of things like that on quarter time. You know that'll be good. The regular equestrian like me and you go, and then you see some of the top, equestrians in the world on that, and they end up going to the Quarter Horse Congress in Ohio, in the fall, and it's going to be a good show.
We also have to point out to a lot of people out there, if you've ever considered wanting to ride or do something, come out to Sunshine Meadows. We have how many barns there are for?
We got 18
riding?
Barns out here.
18 barns, but I think 6 or 7 of them are just for equestrian riding, and the rest are standard bred.
Right. We've got a lot of nice trails out here. We've got some good trainers, and we have horses that would accommodate people of all levels, from beginners up to, professionals.
That's right. There's seven training arenas, and that includes probably one of the nicest dressage mirrored wall rings I've ever seen. And what I'm talking about is a deep sand and dirt to practice dressage on. But what's most impressive about it is that Sunshine Meadows has a wall that's, I think, 50 feet long and 8 feet high, and it's all mirrored glass. So as you're prancing and doing your exercises, you can actually look at the reflection to see that your horse is doing the steps right, which I think I'd love to watch him do that.
Normally, when I drag that, I'll drag that entryway to the dressage ring in the morning, and I have to go by that. I go by that mirror 4 or 5 times, and I drive real slow, and I said, oh, man, reflection in that mirror.
Right, and it hasn't cracked yet.
No, it hasn't. It hasn't, I said, oh, man. Hey, there's another show that, Steve, that I really like because it kind of talks about everything that we do. It's called Last Call. It's a live equestrian sale of all breeds. And like today, well, actually it started yesterday, is the Magic Millions from Australia. You can go to our website, click on Last Call, and you can watch the sales live. And this weekend they're going to have the Magic Million racing. It's all between the 8th and the 14th of January, and live from Australia. So, that's a program that's good. And then also we do like the Fassick Tipkin sales, the Keeneland sales, here in the U.S. And that's where you see some of the Derby winners, are being sold. And the great thing about the sales are it doesn't cost anything to go to unless you're buying. You can go down and you can stand firsthand and watch these horses being sold for millions of dollars and only be just, 15 feet away from them. So if you go to Last Call and take a look at it, you can find out where the next sale is going to be, and, maybe you can attend to it.
Yep, I think that's something. I mean, there's so many disciples or disciplines of the horse industry that we're covering. If you want to look at something, if you want to know about something, just go to IENTV.com, and you're going to get it all.
.org.
I mean,
.org.
.org. Up, my bad.
There's nothing calm about us here. We're an org. We're the original.
Yes, that's right. In fact, there's so much movement and everything going on here in the standard bred industry just for the retired horses so that they can be retrained for riding or to be a pleasure horse for a family, and that they're very, very easy to obtain. And most of these standard breds, which are great riding horses, are broken to saddle. So if you're looking for a riding horse, you need to contact your local retirement foundation or the national one, and you can get a horse, and you can find a trainer and keep it at the Sunshine Meadows and ride the trails and do everything and have an awful lot of fun. And you're giving a good home to a retired racehorse.
We had a lady came here several years ago that got a horse, and she either got it for free or for, you know, less than $500. They were taking it out of training, and so the owner just, you know, was not going to sell it, you know, and find and repurpose the horse. And it was so funny. She comes back 2 years later, and she said, Mr. Scott, he says, you got another free horse for me? And I said, I didn't recognize him. And she told me, she said, I got the standard bred horse here a few years ago. And I said, oh, you did? She said, yeah. I said, how's it doing? She said, I had that horse up to Lexington. It said it's one of the best dressage horses I've ever had. Said had a natural talent for it, and said she could not believe, you know, how fast that horse progressed in dressage. And so she was looking
Absolutely.
For another horse.
Back when the last Olympics was in Korea, in Seoul, Korea, one of the horses that went over was a standard bred pacer that had been retrained, and it didn't get a medal, but it was this horse had a record of 149. He made $100,000, and the young lady that had gotten him from Manhattan had trained him for 2 years for dressage, for jumping, and the next thing you know, it was winning everything and went to the Olympics. It just shows,
yeah,
you know, how versified these the standard breds are.
Oh, exactly. And the longevity on them, too. You know, they're hardy horses. They're strong. You know, they have stamina. And I think that's what helps them in the show horse industry. You know, they
absolutely. These horses have a great foundation. They've jogged, you know, hundreds of miles. They've trained. They've raced. And, you know, now for being able to ride and to jump, they're superb. And some of them are so gentle and nice, you can even use them for an early training horse for young people. I've actually seen standard breds used for hippotherapy, which is one of the,
right,
you know, you've got to have a horse that, you know, you can blow up a building next to and he's not going to budge. But yet there's,
right,
you know, standard breds that can do that. And they, you know, they're great horses.
Well, you know, we'll talk about that. We got a guest coming on here in this month from PB Tech. It's a therapeutic riding center from our Delray Equestrian Center farm. And you're exactly right about these standard breds. A bomb can go off next to them, and they don't flinch at all. You know, and that's why they make such a good therapeutic animal.
Absolutely. And I've seen him done, and I've seen him go through the paces and walking with the young kids and doing the different exercises, and the horses are flawless.
Right.
But that just shows how great the equine horses can be. I mean,
exactly. Well, we're getting close to the end here, Steve.
There's one important thing we got to tell everybody, and that is to make sure to go to IENTV.org and check out our movie of the week. They're always equine-based movies, and
yeah,
our fans love them. When we showed
yeah,
the Green Grass of Wyoming, the,
right,
the harness racing film, we had over 6,000 views, and the fans
yeah,
really like it. One of the
yeah,
nice
well,
features,
we got a good one on there this week. I put up Barbaro, The Love of Barbaro. It's
okay,
about Barbaro the Thoroughbred that won the Kentucky Derby and then had an injury in the Preakness, and it shows how the love for Barbaro they went to the wall to get this horse better. You know, they did everything possible. So it just goes to show you, you know, the horsemen do love and care about their horses.
Absolutely right, and that'll be that's something that people need to watch out for, because it's great entertainment. They're usually about an hour and a half.
Right.
Your computer or laptop won't, you know, totally run out of battery space. But these are great movies we're putting up there, and the fans appreciate it.
Oh, exactly. And I look forward to a lot of things we're doing. I look forward to hearing you from France. You're not going to come back with a French accent, are you?
You never know, Scott. I have enough trouble pronouncing the French words. I'm just going to smile and nod a lot.
That's what I do. I just, you know, to give them a thumbs up, say everything looked good.
Yeah. But, you know, it's going to be a great trip. And, Hopefully, if things work out, I can report live for our next Flying Turn show from Paris.
Okay.
And we'll have a great time as long as you pay the phone call, Bill. That's all.
Oh, I'll do that. That's no problem. You know, we'll do that. I have to get out here and cut some grass or something at Sunshine Meadows, earn a little extra money, you know, to do that. But I'm really looking forward to a great 2020.
Yeah, it's all going to be it's already there. We're already having a great time, Scott, and it's only going to get better.
You got that right. And I want to thank our guys at BBS too. They've done real well for us, and they're helping us along. You know, they're helping me along with my inexperience, and you know, which is really good. And they got a lot of great program on BBS. You know, if you go to bbsradio.com, you know, it's fantastic. They got everything you could think of on there. You know, so
that's right.
We appreciate that.
Well, I think we've got a wrap for this week's version of Flying Turns, and at the wire and the chuck wagon, which I'm making me hungry. I wanted some chili.
Yeah. And speaking of the chuck wagon, send in recipes. We want our listeners to send in recipes.
Okay. I think we're done.
Thanks, Steve.
It's a show.
We're done, buddy.
Okay, Scott. Take care.